The Dice Man Cometh!
Yes, here we are, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode of The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark. This is the show that encourages children to fight like men around the table and for men to play children's games. Mark, good evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, Trent, but I'm hot. It's hot as buggery here. How hot is buggery?
I'm not sure I want to go there, but can I ask you this? Because this is more or less the anniversary of the terrible, terrible bushfires that ripped through Tasmania a year ago, and we've got record temperatures being set right around Australia. Yep. 45 degrees in Adelaide today, yep, apparently, which is just ridiculous. Okay, let me just fade the music down here because this is actually a serious thing that I want to ask you. Your house is on fire. You've saved the family. Yep. You've saved the photo albums. Yep. It's time to save the board game collection, but you've only got time to grab just one game, Mark. What's it going to be? What's it going to be?
Can I have time to think about it?
No, you've got to give me an answer right now. You haven't got time to think about this. The house is burning down. The games are on fire. Grab one, quick.
I think I'd grab my Hogs bag, which has probably got Seven Wonders, Time's Up, and another game that we've been playing lately, probably because that'll let me take three in one hit.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a really tough one because, you know, do I grab the one that's potentially really hard to replace? Do I grab the one that I play all the time but maybe I can replace easily? God, you put me on the spot. What about you?
Well, I can tell you what it wouldn't be.
Yeah?
It wouldn't be Flashpoint Fire Rescue because it hasn't taught me how to stop a fire, has it? Okay, we're going to be talking about all sorts of things tonight, including dexterity games, what we've been playing lately, and we'll be talking to Terry Furness from the Canberra Game Society about the upcoming
CanCon.
CanCon on the Australia Day long weekend in Canberra. This is the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio. Tassie Mob, Heroes and Villains, Your Demise on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark, the Dice Men Cometh, the part of the show we always like to start off with. Just, hey, Mark, Trent, what have you guys been playing lately? And I know what you've been doing today, Mark. You've had the bloody day off.
I have had the day off from work, so I tell you what, I had a round of Wii Golf.
Yeah.
Would you believe? You'll find this funny. I played a bit of Guitar Hero Metallica. Rockin' on.
What songs did you play?
Nothing Else Matters.
Easy.
Sandman.
Easy.
Yeah. I'm going to work my way up, you see.
Hey, you know that last album they put out, Death Magnetic?
No.
Right. Yeah, look, a complete schmozzle mess of an album, and it was mixed absolutely appallingly.
Yeah.
Again, no, Metallica fans who are listening will know this. No bass in there at all. The mixes off Guitar Hero Metallica are better than the version that was actually on the album.
The funniest thing was there's a video in there where they show the guys in this Neversoft studio in their motion capture suits rocking out with their, you know, they're not actually playing the instruments, they've just got the song playing in the background, but they're rocking out as if it's a live concert with their Spaceman motion capture suits on. It's hilarious.
Hey, I could talk about Metallica. Or, you know, they just played Antarctica.
Really?
Yeah. it's just like Metalocalypse, I swear to God. Look, huge fan of the band, could talk about it all day, but we're not talking about...
We should talk about some board games.
Exactly.
What I have played lately at the recent Hogs Night, I played a game called Among the Stars. Now, I hadn't actually heard of it. Scott and Sarah brought it along, and it's a... I don't want to say it's a re-theme, but it's sort of like it's another version, another take on the Seven Wonders drafting mechanic, where you're taking one card and passing it along.
Seven Wonders, one of the big hits of the past couple of years. Everyone has a handful of cards. You choose one to play, and then you pass the rest of the cards to your neighbour.
Yeah, so, and with this one, you're building a space station. So all the cards are rooms, compartments, bits of a space station.
So is that it? You're just getting points for attractive architecture or something?
No.
Or?
So what it is, you know, different rooms, you've got different types of rooms. So you've got military rooms, you've got commercial rooms, you've got recreation rooms. You've got all the, and these things are different colours. And each card has sort of like a victory point condition on it, some of which are a one-off thing, some of which don't kick in till the end of the game, to do with the spatial orientation compared with other rooms. So there's this whole spatial element that Seven Wonders doesn't have, where it's to do with the layout of the station, and you have these power reactors that have these cubes, and some rooms require the transfer of power from the reactor.
This is sounding a little bit like the first part of Galaxy Trucker.
Yeah, so when I saw it, the immediate thing that came to me was it's Seven Wonders crossed with Galaxy Trucker, crossed with something like Race for the Galaxy, where the different cards interact with each other.
And are you getting invaded by space aliens at any point?
No, but you do. There is a conflict element where you fight against the other people you're playing with. And probably this would be, I think, maybe the only downside that I saw is with Seven Wonders, you only have to worry about, pretty much, apart from in the expansion, you only have to worry about the person to your left and to your right. So you're keeping an eye on two people.
Yeah, but that's also one of the criticisms of Seven Wonders, in that there's not a lot of player interaction.
Yeah, but the problem with this is once you've got these massive space stations happening to be built, and then you get a card that says, oh, well, you know, if you've got the most green or the most red, you've got to look around. The base game is 2 to 4 players, but an expansion takes it to 6.
Okay.
So you've got to look around another 5 people's tableau and count how many reds, how many greens, and all that sort of stuff. So that makes it a little bit tricky. There are some things that seem to be directly ripped off from Seven Wonders, like you can chuck out a card for 3 credits instead of 3 coins.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, I really enjoyed it.
Where this comes from, yeah.
Yeah, so it was designed by a guy called Vangelis Bagiotakis, a Greek designer.
The guy who wrote Chariots of Fire.
It could well be him.
The guy who did the Blade Runner soundtrack.
Maybe
and
not.
And who worked with John Anders from Yes.
Maybe.
Somehow I'll find my way home. That Vangelis.
He has a similar name.
Then
it was kickstarted. A German company called Artipia Games picked it up, and they produced an expansion and then kickstarted like a second edition. So it's been another Kickstarter thing. Really nicely produced, nicely coloured cards. Takes up a lot of space. If people want to look, there's a couple of photos on the Dice Men Cometh Facebook page. The Dice Men Cometh facebook.com/ The Dice Men Cometh. We haven't quite conquered Facebook yet, folks.
If you just search Dice Men Cometh, you'll find
That's right. So there's a couple of photos there so you can see it. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Now, in terms of what I've been playing lately, I don't want to oversell this. Okay, I don't want to exaggerate.
Mm-hmm.
But I've played a game in the last week that's changed my entire life.
Tell us more.
It's a game that's brought me incredible joy and crushing despair. Turn by turn, it's made me feel like a child again.
Yeah.
It's transported me out of myself, the way all good art and literature and cinema and games are supposed to. You know, it's removed all the existentialist angst from me.
So you're not just a man sitting, moving plastic on the board. You are...
I am the Tok Tok Woodman. Tok Tok Woodman.
Tok Tok Woodman.
This game is incredible. This is an incredible game.
Yeah.
It reinvents Jenga.
Well, there's a game that needed reinventing.
True. Well, the problem with Jenga, of course, is that it's all fun and games, you know, while the tower's teetering. But as soon as it all falls down, the game's actually over.
Yeah.
In Tok Tok Woodman, you've actually got a little plastic axe, and you're chopping at a plastic tree.
And this is a very Tasmanian game.
The tree... don't go there. Well, it will be if, you know, the Liberals get in at the next election.
Tok Tok Tarkine, we can make one.
So the tower, it's a tree shaped like a little plastic tower, and there are circular bits of the core of the tree,
mm-hmm.
and they're surrounded by 4 bits of bark that easily fall off when you tap it with the little plastic axe.
Yeah.
Each one of those bits of bark is worth 1 point, but if you make the core of the tree fall out, that's worth -5 points.
And how many bits of bark fit around the core?
Well, there's 4 on each segment, and then there's various layers.
So if you knocked out a whole bit, you'd actually be at -1.
I've played this with my family. I've played this with friends. This is an emotional roller coaster of exhilaration and sheer unadulterated terror, and I cannot recommend this enough. Tok Tok Woodman.
You know the worst thing about it is they've actually because it originally was a Korean game, believe it or not,
mm-hmm.
By the famous Korean designer Justin O, who's also designed a game called Gemblo, which is sort of like Bejeweled for board gamers. And they've brought out a new... They didn't like, for some reason, they've brought out a new version, and it's not called Tok Tok Woodman anymore. No. It's called Click Clack Lumberjack.
Okay.
That has just ruined it for me.
Some kind of rhyming title. Okay.
Yeah.
Look, can't recommend this enough, and this has got me thinking about dexterity games in general. Dexterity games being games where instead of sitting and puzzling out the answer, yep. you're flicking something across the table
or hitting
something with something else. I have dismissed this entire category of gaming, and I've rediscovered it over this past week, and I want to talk more about that in just a sec.
Okay.
All right, we'll do that next on The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Playing real slow, but not that slow. Miami Horror on Edge Radio's 99.3 FM. Edge Radio's Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark tonight, talking board games and card games, and specifically dexterity tabletop games. What do we mean by dexterity games?
So, dexterity games are action-oriented games. So, sometimes there's flicking, sometimes there's... throwing, sometimes there's building, there's axing.
Even blowing,
yeah.
which we'll see in a moment.
Yeah.
And this is a category of gaming that I've completely dismissed. But then when you think about it, what's 8-ball or snooker?
It's a dexterity game,
exactly.
totally, isn't it?
Exactly. And the fact that it's in a pub with alcohol, well, clearly, only improves it. So some of the dexterity games that now I'm thinking, oh, do I have to go out and supplement my collection, buy something new? And one of the newest dexterity games on the market, one that everybody's talking about at the moment, is Rampage.
Yeah.
Which is the board game version of the 80s video game, Rampage. Do you know this one?
No, remind me, because I was playing video games in the 80s, but it doesn't ring any bells.
Man, I would have played this more than anything else, where you're one of three monsters, Godzilla, King Kong, or Giant Wolfman, I think it was, climbing buildings, eating people. Little guy with a flamethrower comes out to try and burn you in the video game, and you eat him up and breathe fire.
I must have missed this one. I was probably playing Donkey Kong.
You're playing tennis with trolley cars.
I definitely missed that one.
Fantastic video game. Yeah. There's a board game version of it. And your monsters are invading Meeple City. Three-dimensional buildings made up of stacks of meeples and layers of cardboard, essentially. And your monster is... And this is what's kind of disappointing about it. You don't actually have a monster as such. You've got a lump of wood with a picture of a monster on it. And you've got to drop that... On top of the buildings, you get to flick little wooden cars at each other across the game board. You get to breathe trying to blow the buildings over. And then if there are any meeple, any of the little people lying in your area of the board after you've done that, you get to eat all of them.
This sounds like as a little kid playing soldiers and throwing Lego bricks to simulate mortars and...
Pretty much. I don't think it actually looks... It doesn't look that great, really.
It doesn't sound great. I mean, one of the things I love about not that I played a lot of dexterity games, but there is that equalization element where you can play it against kids and you can play it flat out. Mm. So you don't have to hold back like you do when you play a strategy type game with kids. You can play hard at it. They can play hard at it. You can have a real head-to-head tussle.
Would you know any good ones?
Yeah, look, one classic, and it's one of these ones, gamers just wet themselves about this game, called Lupin Louie. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I played Lupin Louie.
There you go. So it's like the old barnstorming biplane flying around, and it's mechanized, so it's like battery-operated. And this plane basically just flies around, and each person has a number of chickens. And on top of your chickens, you have this little flipper. And Lupin Louie, if left to his own devices, he'll run around, hit all these little chicken counters and drop them down to the middle and you lose them. So you have this little lever so that when Lupin Louie flies at your chickens, you flip the lever, it hits Louie, he flies up in the air. Sometimes he does a loop, sometimes he goes backwards, and it adds an element of randomness, and then hopefully he comes crashing down on someone else's chickens.
This just sounds like a sketch from The Muppet Show, doesn't it? With Gonzo and
Yeah, it is so much like that. You can actually get... a Buzz Lightyear version of this.
Because
for ages it wasn't around.
Yeah, right.
And now it's been re-released as it's a Buzz Lightyear version.
Okay.
I have played it. It's a lot of fun. So that's Loop and Louie.
Another one, and look, in all seriousness, this actually does look like a great game. It's called Cube Quest.
Oh, yeah.
Now, imagine this. You've got an army of soldiers, but each soldier is represented by a cube.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got different kinds of cubes with different stickers on them. So they can move slightly differently. Maybe they can stack on top of each other. You've also got a king cube. Now, if you manage to remove your opponent's king cube from the board,
mm-hmm.
you win. How do you do this? By lining up, you put the actual board, the actual box that the game comes in, in between the two players, set up your cubes behind that, do the big reveal by taking the box lid away, and then start flicking your cubes at each other. And look, tell me that doesn't sound like fun.
Look, it does. The thing that was made me think then was, dice are cubes. Do you roll them in any way? Is there any diciness to this game?
Well, like I said, there might be some different moves that you can do with some of the different pieces. There are advanced rules. So that's Cube Quest, and that is seriously actually on my short list for purchase.
Okay,
now.
Look, one that I haven't played, but I've seen it, Pitch Car.
So
it's basically like slot car racing with these wooden tracks that have like little rails on the sides, and you flick the cars around the track, and you can build massive big wooden tracks.
With the advantage of that you can play it in a blackout.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I've seen these tracks with jumps and obstacles. I've seen it, pictures of it set up at some of the big board game conventions in America, like a massive track. It reminds me a bit of the old, you know, pen racing, where you flick your pen and you go from where the line finishes.
Ah, yes.
But it looks like a lot of fun. Pitch Car.
Something I was thinking when I sort of started to go down this dexterity game rabbit hole, there's a lot of games themed around Japanese food or Chinese food. Okay, you've got games like Wasabi, where you're, you know, preparing the various sushi dishes, or Wok Star, where you're running a restaurant.
Or even Tokaido, where you're going to the
exactly,
noodle place.
Exactly. Surely there's got to be a game where chopsticks are involved. And I was thinking, hey, that's a great idea for a game, Trent. Why did you design that? Turns out somebody else already has.
Yeah.
It's called Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000.
Really?
Right. You get a bowl full of random wooden objects, you know, little stars, meeples, hearts, whatever, and you've got to dive in there with the chopsticks to come with the game and see how many you can get. And then I think maybe you've got to stack them up one on top of each other to see how high you can get or something like that. Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000. I just wanted to say that on the radio, really.
That's a classic. Look, a game that I have wanted to get for literally years. I first saw the German version, which was called Tier auf Tier, which I think is layer upon layer. But the English version is called Animal upon Animal.
This one won a Golden Geek Award from the Board Game Geek website, didn't it?
It's brilliant. And basically what you've got is I guess it's a bit Jenga-ish. It's stacking animals, but what you've got is the animals are different shapes. So you've got, you usually have the crocodile being the base. Because the animals are all different shapes, and then you have these cards that say, right, you've got to stack the sheep on top of the monkey, then you've got to stack the turtle on top of the sheep. You know, it's a stacking game, and bits are falling off, and it's a race to who can stack the most. I love it because it's got big, chunky wooden animals, really nicely produced. It's a Harbour game, I think, that, you know, one of those German companies, they produce the lovely wooden stuff. I've never seen it available for sale, but I'd love to get a copy, Animal upon Animal.
So there you go, a whole bunch of dexterity games there that, a lot like 8-Ball, you'll find that they improve with alcohol, and so does your performance.
Yeah, what about our favourite Space Cadets?
Space Cadets.
Where you're flicking the missiles at each other.
Yeah, absolutely, that's another one as well. So look, you might be listening to this thinking, what the hell are these guys talking about? These are tabletop games that involve a little bit of dexterity. It's the whole wide world of tabletop gaming, which is just exploded in the last couple of years. And one of the things that has come up is the prevalence of conventions around the country. We run our own here through the Hobart Gaming Society, and there's one coming up on the Australia Day long weekend in Canberra, CanCon. We're going to talk to a bloke called Terry Furness from the Canberra Game Society and what that's all about in just a moment on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dead Maggies now.
And that was the Dead Maggies, another great Tassie act with their song George the Third. You're listening to The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, earlier in the week, Trent, you spoke to Terry Furness from the Canberra Games Gaming Society about the CanCon convention. Let's hear what Terry had to say.
So CanCon, the Australia Day long weekend coming up at Epic in Canberra. It's one of the biggest events, if not the biggest, on the board gaming calendar. 3 days of war games, board games, card games, and anything that can be called tabletop games. There's retailers, there's cosplay, there's tournaments, there's demos of new game releases from overseas that aren't even in stores yet. And the brains behind the board game library at CanCon joins us now at the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio. Terry Furness, good evening.
Good evening.
How are the preparations for CanCon going?
They're coming along quite well. The stand sort of mad panic in the last couple of weeks. But if you're familiar with our Facebook page, you'll see that a lot of the new release games that are going to be available in the library have been being posted over the last month. The sort of wet people's appetite. We've got our volunteers all lined up, and I think we're starting to move towards the excitement stage of preparations. Only 2 weeks to go.
Yeah, well, you're locked in now, so you may as well get excited.
That's true.
Just to explain for those who might not know, CanCon, it's an annual free event, but it's kind of like an umbrella event with lots of other stuff going on, and the board game library is just one section within it.
It is. So CanCon's actually been around for 36 years now. When it started, it was probably predominantly role-play and tabletop gaming. And as you sort of said in the introduction, when we say tabletop gaming, that can range from miniature war gaming, games like Blood Bowl, Warhammer, all that sort of stuff. But CGS has never discriminated. They're open to pretty much anything that fits under the umbrella of gaming. Their only real requirement for an event that runs at CanCon is that it can cover its cost. Look, this year, there's a big range. We've got the tabletop games, and one of the features of that is they're bringing out Meg Maples from Privateer Press. She's going to be doing some painting classes, and I think there's going to be a painting competition across the weekend. There's a standard Magic and customizable card games. There's big competitions associated with that. And the Games Capital, who's actually one of the sponsors for the Games Library, they're flying out Rob Alexander, who's, I'm told, quite a famous Magic artist. We've got some tournaments around board games. 21st Century Board Games runs that over the weekend. There's cosplay this year. Lots of vendors. We've got our board games. There's kid games. I think there's even a travel agent who's coming along that specialises in historic themed travel, and of course the board game library, which is where I spend my time. Look, we've got over 200 odd games that are available for everyone to come and play. There's probably two things we aim at within the board game library. The first is, from a cost perspective, we try to cover our costs, but the second is to promote board gaming. So as well as our standard audience of hobby gamers, we're trying to introduce people to the gaming as well. So we try to make sure that there's somebody who's just come into CanCon, because as you said, it's a free event, can just walk in the doors and see the game library. And
you're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, and you've done something to the delay. What have you done? I've got a really big delay of what I'm talking. That's much better, thank you. You didn't have to bleep me out. And look, we had a problem there with our interview. Something happened. Yeah, it wasn't reading properly.
Yeah, look, we were trying to bring you a chat I had with Terry Furness from the Canberra Games Society, and it's very embarrassing, but we've got some technical issues with the recording that I made. We're obviously doing these things off our own bat. I'm recording that on with a chat that I had with him on Skype, and I'm really spewing that I can't bring that to you right now, because he was such a nice guy and so giving of his time. And the way the Canberra Games Society works with running an event like CanCon, like he was saying in that interview, I'm not sure if you heard, but the event's been running for 36 years.
Yeah, that's quite amazing, isn't it, for a community event like that?
Exactly. And these things run on the smell of an oily rag. But with the board game library part of it, he's trying to make it sort of revenue neutral. He is charging a fee for people to come in and play these games. And you might think, well, hey, why would I, pay money to sit down and play a board game, which is something I could do at home?
Why would I pay money to sit down and play a board game? I could do that at home.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because the guys in CanCon have got some of the latest releases that aren't yet actually even available in stores yet here in Australia.
Yes.
Things that were unveiled at the German Essen Fair last year. Essen, probably one of the biggest board gaming events in the international calendar.
Mm.
And the all sorts of things that have been provided by some game companies.
That in itself is attractive.
Yeah, they've got there exclusively. And then, of course, there's the whole sort of, you know, community thing around it, where people travel from interstate to go to this event.
Well, we've got people from the Hobart Game Society going along, haven't
we? Exactly, So that's over the Australia Day long weekend in Canberra at the Exhibition Park there. It's called Epic Exhibition Park in Canberra.
Novel name.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a dodgy venue, to be perfectly honest, but the guys there from the Canberra Game Society really do class it up. And the Board Game Library's been bought in to replace the Toy and Game Expo, which used to be part of it, but that's since gone to Sydney.
Yeah.
And that's held in Sydney now every July.
Ah.
And they have board game tournaments there as well. And they've taken that to a larger city on a larger stage, and they're trying to, you know, make a big deal out of that. And so those are just two of the events that happen every year around the country. You've also got, CanCon's probably the first thing. There's WinterCon that happens in June. That's a smaller version of the Canberra Game Society's annual event. There's Concentric, which is the new South Australian one. And this happens in the Barossa Valley.
Oh, nice.
And you can actually, I believe the accommodation's set up in old train carriages.
It sounds fantastic, actually.
Yeah, so and when you're playing with friends, and then you're all staying in the one venue, which is more or less, that I believe is happening in September. Later this year.
Oh, okay.
I haven't locked down the date for that just
yet. Fantastic. We'll have to let people know about that one.
And then there's BorderCon, which is...
We went to last year.
Which is in Albury. And you might think, well, hey, what the hell happens in Albury? And you'd be right and fair in asking that question, because normally the answer is not much. Albury, though, is a nice central location between Adelaide, Melbourne and Canberra and, you know, Sydney to a slightly lesser extent. And so you do get plenty of people from all those places converging on the Hume Hotel, is it called?
And I think, from memory, they had... Was it up to 300 people there when we went, or 250?
It was fully booked.
Yeah.
It was fully booked, and everyone's just there. They, you know, these are friends who catch up with each other every year at this event, or if not, you know, maybe one or two other conventions, and they're just sitting around playing games for the whole weekend.
Yeah. Look, it sounds fantastic. I've actually just booked my leave for the Queen's Birthday long weekend to get to BorderCon again this year for anyone who's looking to go away and play board games for a whole weekend.
So
it'll be huge.
Look, apologies for not being able to bring you that interview with Terry Furness for now. I will have another look at the recording that I've made and try and bring it to you again. There is still time. If you're thinking about maybe getting up to Canberra, you can get yourself a cheap flight.
We did have Tommy Dean too, the return of Tommy Dean, the week after we were meant to have Tommy the first time. So I'm sure Terry will come back and visit us. Speaking of gaming with the friends, I just wanted to shout out to a friend of ours who's copped a bit of flack on this show, not necessarily from us, our good friend John, who's not in his 70s, as Christine had said. He's much younger than that. He's only in his mid-60s.
But he just looks like he's in his 70s.
He is, yeah. Look, and he's a lovely guy. He was one of the people that introduced me to Euro games.
Okay.
For me, he bought me the revelation of Euro games, and so...
You've got a bloody song to play for him.
I call him John the Revelator. That was John the Revelator. And he was a revelator to me. He taught me all about Euro games. That, of course, was Depeche Mode.
Euro games being a particular type of board game involving resource management, not a lot of conflict between players, and usually some kind of really boring theme like... you know,
or not.
Shipping and trading in the Mediterranean.
Farming in a cave.
Well, actually, farming in a cave. What the hell's that all about?
Yeah.
There's this game coming out called Caverna, which is by Uwe Rosenberg. He's the guy who designed one of the best regarded board games in the world currently, called Agricola, which is a game, you might guess, about farming in the Middle Ages, without the benefit of any modern agricultural technology. So Caverna is kind of a spiritual sequel to that, except you're farming in a cave. Makes complete sense to me.
I don't get it. Like, I thought Agricola was a really good game People are raving about it, though, so who knows? Now, people might ask, where do you find out about all these board games? You guys are like have this encyclopedic knowledge of board games. Well, you know what? It's not all our own information.
No, correct.
There is this place called the internet, and there's a website called Board Game Geek. As if this hobby isn't geeky and nerdy enough already, they call it Board Game Geek. But Board Game Geek, Trent, do you spend much time there?
Far too much time. Far too much time. And one of the things that we've talked about on this show previously are barriers to the board gaming hobby, the perception that it is geeky, the perception that it is all sweaty boys in basements, the difficulty of learning rules. Board Game Geek, I put it to you, is equal parts blessing and curse to the hobby because,
yes.
Look, it's essentially a social networking site. It's a website that's been going since...
For antisocial people.
Since 2000. There are profiles there of over 60,000 different board games, and these are all supplemented with stats that have been submitted by users, people who've played them. People can post their own reviews of these games, write them up, record their own videos. There are 400,000 users of this site, Board Game Geek, around the world.
That's amazing, isn't it?
They do their own awards every year. We mentioned them earlier, the Golden Geek Awards.
Yep.
And actually, look, I must say, the Golden Geek Awards are normally pretty good.
Yeah.
When you look through the list, you could pick up any of those in their various categories.
Yep, absolutely.
And they're normally pretty good games.
A lot of that, I think, is because they are voted on by the users. And you said there is such a broad base. I did see recently they gave out some of their 2013 stats. I mean, as with anything on the internet, pretty much except gaming, which is all kids from Korea, about 50% of the users on Board Game Geek are based in America.
Sure.
4%, I think, were from Australia. Around the same percentage were from Canada. About 5 or 6% from the UK. 5 or 6% from places like France and Italy.
Yeah. Look, it's very white. It's very
male.
I say it's very white, but actually increasingly not so much. You mentioned Korea because both Korea and Japan do have big board gaming communities.
Yeah.
And Japan's got its own weird thing happening with all these mini games that are going on. And I guess the great thing about it is that they crowdsource all this content and all this information on all these games. So you're able to go in and say, right, I need a game that plays up to 6 or 8 people. I want it to take about this long. I want it to be about this heavy as far as the rules go. And you can put all that into a search engine and actually get the result that you want.
Yeah, and look, I know I've used that aspect of it much in the past. Like, I like game X. Let me find some other games that are like that I might like as well. The other thing for me is the reviews.
Mm.
So probably I would have half a dozen people that I respect their opinion. And I think, well, I wonder, I'm thinking about buying a game like I did with, I'm thinking about buying Pathfinder Adventure Card Game.
Which I've advised you not to go on.
Yes. So I jumped on Board Game Geek and I looked up to see what Tom Vassell said about it, what this guy called the Undead Viking Lance, his name is, said about it. What some people that I know, I've watched their reviews regularly. They do really good informative reviews. Sometimes they're video reviews, some written reviews. And it gives me an idea of, if that guy liked it, maybe I'm going to like it. It's a great information source.
So criticisms, it's very white. It takes itself far too seriously. There's not enough of a sense of humour on this website. And also, it's bloody ugly. Let's face it.
Yeah, it's really difficult to navigate. And they have been talking about doing a revamp of the whole thing for ages now, and it just hasn't come about.
This looks like the internet circa 1995, okay? And it just hasn't improved since then. And I don't frankly think there's really any excuse for it, except that just people are a little bit sort of stuck in the way that they do things.
Yeah.
And there are so many things that could be done to polish this up. But at the moment, you go onto Board Game Geek for the first time, and all of that functionality that we're talking about is lost because the damn thing's so messy.
Yeah.
And you've really got to put some time into actually getting to know it. I still don't understand how the whole thing works. You sent me some stuff. You sent me an email on Board Game Geek.
I sent you some Geek Gold.
What's Geek Gold? I don't know what that is. What do I do with that?
Build up your geek cred because you don't have an avatar.
What do I need an avatar
on your
for?
User? So you've just got your name and it's blank. Whereas I've got the image of the Dice Man cometh as my avatar now.
Have you?
Yeah.
I haven't even noticed.
There you go. So Geek Gold is like the currency. And
so did you have to pay money for that?
No, no. So look, it used to be when I first joined, which was in about 2005, I think, the way you got Geek Gold was you submitted reviews, you submitted photos and stuff like that. It was really, really hard to get. Now, Geek Gold, it's like you're falling over in the street.
I haven't had any Geek Gold leading up to this.
I actually get Geek Gold because I'm a member of the Board Game Geek group in Folding at Home, this sort of group computing thing where they're folding proteins, searching for disease cures, and it's the sort of thing that works away in the background of your computer, and I'm in a Board Geek group of that. And every month they send me Geek Gold for being involved in that. That's one way.
You get Geek Gold for contributing to medical research.
Absolutely.
And you've given some of it to me.
I have, yeah. Okay. So get yourself an avatar.
And you want me to buy an avatar.
Get some geek cred.
Well, what should my avatar be?
It could be the Dice Man Cometh image as well.
Well, you've already got that, though.
I don't know.
What am I going to have?
Have a think about it for a minute, but I want to put this to you.
Okay.
Back in the days when I didn't know about games when I was young, I used to play Monopoly. I used to play this game called Payday. Do you ever play Payday?
Rings of vague.
Yeah,
bell.
Look, yeah. And it
Monopoly ripoff, essentially. Yeah.
Oh no, not really.
Slash Game of Life.
Yeah, no. Well, then the next game that I found about with the graphic spinner was the Game of Life.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for a long time I used to play Monopoly, but then when I found out about the Game of Life,
you're going to play a song, aren't you? You're going to play another one of your stupid game theme songs.
I used to say, "Get Monopoly away from me and bring me to life." That was Evanescence with Bring Me to Life. You're with the Dice Man Cometh.
Oh, it's over. Sorry.
Trent doesn't like my music at all, apparently.
Between Evanescence and Depeche Mode, it's like the 90s never ended in here today.
When did they end?
Is that a 2000 track?
I think it's 2006.
Very 90s. You know nothing about metal at all, do you?
No, That song came from Guitar Hero. That's where I loved it from.
Oh, right, which is what you've been doing all day,
of course. Today I've been doing Guitar Hero Metallica.
Right.
Anyway, it's about time for us to go.
Okay, yeah, look, apologies again for not being able to bring you Terry Furness from the Canberra Game Society this week. We'll endeavour to bring you that interview next week once we've ironed out the difficulties with that. In the meantime, the Hobart Game Society meets again this weekend. When and where?
We're back at Lena Valley on Saturday night, 7 p.m. onwards. You're all welcome.
I'm going to be on Maria Island.
Oh.
It's going to be 36 degrees on Friday.
I'm working all day.
I'm on Maria Island, no running water.
Oh, bad luck.
No board games either.
I'm working all day, but I'm going to be along in the night, looking forward to playing some more games. And that's about all we've got time for. So we're going to leave you with Tricky... Nothing's changed.
Catch you next week.
See you next week on The Dice Man Cometh.